mention these two things?
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with this or not.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No.
There are two excellent speeches in here about the Rockefeller interest in and activity in connection with the State University.
Great.
One by Paul Valette and Jim Lawrence, who were both here in the Division of the Budget. Jim later ended up with the City University, and that's where he is now. And the other was by Robert McCrae, who was counsel to Nelson Rockefeller, and did his legal work in connection with it. They're both short chapters, but they are excellent pieces of work.
Let me have the title of the book.
Yep. It's in the library, I'm sure.
Rockefeller in Retrospect, The Governor's New York Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Edited by Gerald Benjamin and Lee Norman Hurd.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
They put out by the Institute.
Right.
Right here.
Good.
I assume you're familiar with the governor's public papers.
Yes.
Well,
I'm familiar with the Red Book. That's all.
Every year, at the end of the year, the governor's public papers are published. This happens to be the Rockefeller papers for the year 1960. And everything that he was there,
that's his first
year. No, 59 was his first year. He was at Stony Brook in 1960. That was why I happened to bring this one along.
Groundbreaking.
Everything that he said publicly, everything that he handed out in the way of press releases, every address that he made, with some exceptions, is in here. I thought everything was here. But there's one thing I wanted that isn't here, but I think I can know. I know where we can find it. This is
What page is that?
That is page 992.
992.
Of the public papers of Nelson Rockefeller for 1960. And it's the item at the bottom of the page.
The University of New York. April 4th. Governor Rockefeller will break ground Friday afternoon, April 8th.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So let's put over here.
But
the text of the speech is not here.
The text is not there.
But if it exists, I know where we can get it.
Good.
The book archives in New York or at Botanical are available to us. And we can get it if you need it.
I think we ought to have it.
Uh-huh.
I think we ought to have it. Our own university. Let me ask you one question before we start on number one. What commitments were already made to Stony Brook when you came in, when Rockefeller came in? Do you have any idea of that? The State University was in place.
The Long Island Center
was still at
the college.
At this point, something happened to the tape, so we are repeating some of this. I think I asked you the difference between the attitude of Governor Harriman and the attitude of Governor Rockefeller toward the State University.
Yes.
It's going now. Where should we start? With the creation of the Young Commission in 1948 after the war by Governor Dewey. We have to start there again.
All right. I think that the committee was actually appointed in 1946 or 1947. Because I believe the report came in 1947.
this problem before.
I'll put it this way. All right, go ahead. The commission was actually appointed in 46 or 47, and the legislation came in 1948.
And when I came here in 1950 to be budget director, the state university was still in its swaddling clothes.
Right.
It seems to me that it had completed one state fiscal year, which means that it began officially in, well, April 1st, 1949. I may be a year off, but that was essentially the time. And the creation of the State University, of course, was one of the Governor Dewey's favorite achievements. He believed it was one of the most important that he accomplished during the years that he was here. And that led, of course, to the developments that we've mentioned in connection with the Harriman years, with which I wasn't really familiar, but which I know produced important results. I remember, for example, being at the dedication of a building at Geneseo. Yes, Governor Harriman.
Okay. And
at that time, I was a member of the Board of Regents and represented the board at that dedication. Governor Harriman, of course, was the speaker of the day and spoke most impressively about the development of the State University, including the work at Geneseo. And, of course, it was during the Harriman years that the groundwork was laid for Stony Brook. Even though the new campus, as we know it now, didn't become a reality, the groundwork for it was laid, and after work began there following his administration, the new construction got underway and the operations were moved from planting fields.
Right. Let's go to question three. What was the basis of Rockefeller's interest in public higher education in New York? When did he become interested in it?
Well, he certainly was very much interested even before he ran for governor in 1958. I didn't know him well. I had served on a commission with him to prepare for the 1958 or 1959 Constitutional Convention. And as I say, I didn't know him well, but I was not at all surprised in reading his inaugural address to see a genuine commitment to education, elementary and secondary, as well as higher education. And it was there, at that time, that he said that the estimates were that the number of college-age youngsters were going to double in the next 10 years, and in his opinion, neither the public nor the private institutions of higher learning in New York were prepared for that. And since he believed that every youngster who had the ability to complete higher education and who wanted to do it should not be denied the opportunity just because he didn't have the financial resources. And that was the basis for the program he undertook to expand the State University and also to greatly increase the financial aid available to students.
Right. Now, I asked you about the appointment of the Hill Commission.
Yes.
Do you want to go into that?
Yes. The Hill Commission was appointed by Governor Rockefeller, I believe in 1959. It was composed of Mr. Heal, who was president or had been president of New York University, John Gardner, who was with the Carnegie Foundation, and Marion Paulson, who had been Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, while Governor Rockefeller, incidentally, was in Washington. All three of them distinguished individuals with genuine interest in higher education, and it was one of those unusual public research groups that tackled their job with vengeance. They had an outstanding staff man by the name of Sidney Ticton. And their report came in less than a year.
Is he living?
I honestly don't know.
No.
I don't know. But their report came in within the year, and it was one of the best pieces of work that that I think was ever done. It was clear and specific, and the interesting thing about it was that virtually everything that was recommended has been implemented. In fact, the governor began recommending the various parts that had been proposed almost immediately after the report was submitted.
Do you have any idea as to what changed the thinking, or where the thinking was with regard to the Long Island Center at the time that Governor Rockefeller came in? The Heald Commission specifically mentions Stony Brook, and it mentions that it should stand with the finest in the land and bring in first rate people from all over the world. That vision, I think, became the standard for the people at Stony Brook. And to what extent the central administration followed that is a question in my mind.
I see. Well, there was no question about the views of the Heald Commission on that particular subject, because, as I recall it, they specifically said that the State University needed a small core, a small group of outstanding research universities, including one on Long Island, that would help make the State University one of the leading, if not the leading, institution of its kind in the country. And while the basic work had been done in connection with selecting a site and negotiating for the property at Stony Brook, it was not until after Governor Rockefeller was actually inaugurated that they broke ground and started on the building of the facilities that have now produced such a large institution.
Groundbreaking was April 8, 1960.
Correct.
And you think one of Governor Rockefeller's addresses there would be in his papers, or do you think you can find out?
Well, a copy of that address is not in the published public papers of the governor. But my guess is that if it exists, and I suspect it does, it's probably in the governor's archives, either in New York City or at Pocatico. And I made a note to write the young lady in charge to determine whether or not it's available, and if so, she could provide you with a copy.
That would be fine. Good. All right. I have one question under five. Whose idea was it to have a master plan?
My guess is that it was at least hinted at, if not specifically mentioned, in the Heald report. But
I think you're right.
Yes, I know it was in the Heald report. I think it was hinted at or suggested even in the Young report, as early as the Young report in the 1940s. But I know it was specifically mentioned in the Heald report. And, of course, it's become a fixture in the whole area of higher education in New York.
The
Muir Commission was appointed as a result of recommendation of the Heald Commission. The Heald Commission recommended a special study to determine the health education needs of the state. They didn't say we didn't have time to go into it, but they felt it was such an important area. It was not adequately covered in their report, but there should be a special study of it. And it was for that reason that the governor appointed what's called the Muir Commission, and out of it grew the plan to really develop a statewide system of medical education that's second to none.
Malcolm Muir was publisher of Newsweek. Lester Evans was executive secretary of the Commonwealth Fund. Thomas Aaron?
Yes.
Had been Surgeon General.
Who was?
Two of them came into my office. I had been on the job only a couple of months. And they didn't announced themselves. They came into the office, sat down, and said that they were commissioned to study the need for the health sciences. And they had an idea that they wanted to place a comprehensive health science center on the campus of a growing university, one where the administrative framework was not already set in concrete, so that the idea would be that the institution and the health sciences center would grow together and grow in cooperation, close cooperation. And the report came out in 63 saying that the first of those centers should be built at Stony Brook. I brought our graduate council together to meet with them while they were hastily got to work together. Well, now, with whom in the central administration did you have the closest dealings? Because the Bureau of the Budget has an image for some of us that is somewhat frustrating, as you can imagine. And what did you think of the nature of the financial requests, nature of the financial exigency that the state university people faced in trying to build, let's say, Stony Brook, for example?
Well, my contact with state university people were more with the president, as he was then called, than with his assistants. I knew his assistants, and the top folks in the division of the budget were primarily with them, particularly those that had a direct responsibility for budgeting and expenditures. I was involved when we needed to have discussions with the president.
This is Tom Hamilton?
Tom Hamilton and his successors and predecessors. I worked with Al Yerrick, for example, with Tom Hamilton, with the lovely president he had while I was there. But the day-to-day work was done primarily by our assistants. Our deputy budget director, Don Axelrod, for example, is one of the key persons. He was succeeded by Paul Vallette. I was available, and I was involved. I conducted the budget hearings that were held. The representatives of the legislature were there at those hearings. And our attempt always was to try and apportion the limited resources, and they always were, among insatiable needs.
Right.
And I use the word need advisedly.
Mm-hmm.
We usually had guidelines from the governor as to what he believed could be financed with the available resources and the extent to which, if it was necessary, increases in taxes could be passed. Because after all, those took the approval of the legislature. It wasn't just an arbitrary administrative decision by the governor. And so our attempt was to try and help meet as efficiently and as effectively as we could all of the needs of the state, including the state university. And of course, the tremendous need for doubling the operations of the state university in 10 years for undertaking $1 billion construction program in a matter of years were challenges that I don't think any state has ever before met. I am sure there were persons in the state university who felt we were not moving as rapidly as we could, certainly not as rapidly as we should, but there were all the limitations on the funds that were available because of other needs of the state, the transportation for mental hospitals, and so on. But it was with our attempt to try and do the best we could under the circumstances. I thought we had good relationships with the state university people. We never completely satisfied them, but it was rare that any department head felt that he had been dealt with as adequately as he should have been.
Well, your position was a difficult one. I realize that if you're the budget, you had somehow to persuade the legislature that what you felt was the need should be met. Those on the firing line, in a sense, in other words, who had to do the creating, that is, designing the facilities, appointing faculty and staff, were attempting to carry out the vision, let's say, in the field report, what they understood to be the needs of the state. And I know that we at Stony Brook thought we had to get into graduate work as quickly as possible. This was 62, and we had already had authorization for graduate work in engineering, physics, and chemistry, I think it was, at that point. How much support did Rockefeller get from the legislature for the plans and the conception of a state university?
In my opinion, he got tremendous support from the legislature. I'm sure there were exceptions to that rule, but I was surprised at the extent to which he was able to convince the leaders and the membership through them of the need for the state university and the requirements for meeting their challenges. And I was interested in a comment that was often made by some of the legislative people after Governor Rockefeller left office. They said, we're going to see now that the state university gets cut back to reasonable levels. They had felt that the governor was overly enthusiastic and that he had gone too fast and too far in helping develop the state university. Most of us didn't feel that way, but there were some who did.
Would I be correct in making a distinction between the point of view with regard to the state university that looked at it from a state context and the point of view that those outside, such as people in the Hill, in connection with the Hill Report, that looked at possibilities for at least the centers, the four centers, in relation to their view of national needs and the level at which other state universities were now operating, were then operating.
Well, the conversion from what could be called the ordinary approach to one in which the place of the state university in the overall national scheme of things was the process of education in itself.
Yes.
And that was one of the main outgrowths of the Hill Commission. It set the stage, and I think was largely responsible, certainly a major factor, in developing the legislative support that gave us the growth that we had, and particularly the vast construction program that made it all possible.
How much opposition to the growth of the state university did Governor Rockefeller face from the private universities and their alumni who were in the state legislature?
The opposition was not, in my opinion, as great as one might think. There was some regional opposition from legislators who felt that their particular area wasn't getting an adequate share of the total operating funds and construction program. But for the most part, where the opposition from the private institutions was not very serious, in my opinion. Back in the late 50s, when I was a member of the Board of Regents, the Regents had undertaken a survey to determine the extent to which the public and private institutions were prepared to meet the post-war demands of the young people of the state. And I well remember going to one of the regional meetings in which the results of the questionnaire that had been sent out by the Education Department to all of the public and private institutions was considered. This is in one of the southern tier areas. And I was surprised at the extent to which the private colleges claimed inability to expand greatly to help meet the post-war need for higher education. There was one exception to that. Many of the private denominational schools seemed bent on doing their utmost, regardless of the fact they weren't sure where the funds were coming from or how they were going to be able to achieve it. But the institution that I was with at that time, Cornell, showed very little interest in expanding greatly because they claimed they had financial problems and they also felt that a great expansion might dilute the quality of training they were able to provide. And they were not optimistic about a significant increase in enrollment. And this is typical of most of the private institutions, with the exception of many of the private denominational schools. They seemed not exactly held back for election, but determined that they were going to do their part in trying to meet this post-war demand for training for higher education youngsters. So I was never aware that the governor had serious opposition from them. I suspect that many of them felt that there should have been more state assistance, directly and indirectly, to the private institutions, and there should have been more of it sooner. But it seems to me, in retrospect, the governor's record in that regard is outstanding because of the scholar incentive program and various other aids that made it possible for large numbers of youngsters to attend private institutions instead of public institutions. Those programs, incidentally, are very well covered in this book,
in that book,
Rockefeller in Retrospect, because Jim Lawrence, one of those who gave one of these two talks, was here in the Division of the Budget at that time, and later became a vice president, I think, of City University.
This is number eight. How clearly did you think the central administration understood their responsibilities for higher education in New York? Was their thinking within a state or a national context? What was your impression of their vision and competence? These are very different on your part.
Yeah. In my opinion, the folks in charge, for the president down, understood their responsibilities. I think at times they felt swamped with their responsibilities, and regardless of staff, regardless of the financial support the governor gave them, felt that getting everything done as well as they would like to have it done and as quickly as it had to be done was an almost insurmountable task. But for the most part, I consider them well aware of the nature of their responsibility. I believe that they were conscientious and hardworking and doing their best under the circumstances to make the deadlines.
One impression that I have had is that there was a period of transition, or it was a transition, from a period where the initiative in the establishment of Stony Brook came almost entirely from the central office. In other words, from Albany, either the central office or the governor's office. Then a period in which initiation was going both ways. The initiation was coming from the local campus to the central office. vice versa. And then, subsequently, under toll and particularly, where the initiative came largely from the local campus. Now, what can you say about that as being a matter of fact, or is that fiction in my mind?
Well, I never realized that that situation existed. It may have, but I honestly was never aware of it. I felt that there was unusual teamwork between central administration and those interested in and responsible for the local and the regional development of Stony Brook as an institution. And I would have thought that without any exception that I can think of, that there was good teamwork and a driving force to push ahead as fast as funds and...